Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you are in the world. This is the OOR conference call for 17 September 2010. This is a panel discussion entitled Getting OOR Development Going, Take 4. Our speakers today, besides myself, Todd Schneider, will be Mike Dean, with a substitute alias by Peter Yim, Natasha Noy, Emmanuel Norman, Ken Bapowski, Alexander Garcia, and hopefully Mike Gruninger. And, of course, the subject is, as the title suggests, Getting OOR Development Going. We now have a code base to work from, and I'll say a little more about that in my presentation. Now, I was pleased to discover that some of the items I'm going to talk about on my presentation are actually covered by several of the other speakers. Subsequently, I will not spend much time on them, but just some background information, and speakers can amplify those as they would like. So, if we go to my slide, I use Peter's picture as our basic symbol. So go to slide 2, please. So what I want to talk about very quickly, so we can spend more time with speakers, is a way to get things going and in particular keep them going. I mean, we've already started. We've made some progress, but there have been sort of fits and starts, and it would be better if we had a more continuous stream of development. And what I want to address here, and as I said, some of the other speakers are also addressing, are more process issues, independent of particulars of details of what actually gets developed and deployed and so on. So if we go to slide 3. Michael Gruninger. Hello?
Hey, Todd. Sorry. It's Michael. I'm late.
Oh, hi, Michael. You can chime in after I finish rambling on here. As I said, Michael, I'm going to go through this stuff, my slides, very fast because I discovered that some of the other speakers are speaking of the same subject. So I will let them digress or, I should say, never mind. Moving on to slide 3, please. So, for those of you that are not familiar with some of the assumptions that go into OOR, here they are again. We want to have an evolutionary development. We want to partition the functionality so we can support the evolutionary development. The issue of whether OOR stores instance data and or will it be designed to do so, I'm not sure that that's been resolved. We want to be able to support these arbitrary representation languages, and we do need to focus more on the metadata and or provenance information of the ontology. And we want to be able to be standards-based as much as possible, so I suspect in the process of continuing the development of OOR, we will, in fact, be developing de facto standards, or shall we say, de facto standards. On to slide 4, please. So here are some of the principles that have been outlined. All of this material is available on the OOR wiki pages. So here are some of the principles. We have to have the scalability, the ability to be distributed, support evolutionary environment, blah, 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 blah. And, of course, the last one, I really like, is it would be nice if we could move the whole development effort to be ontologically driven. But right now, hopefully in the future. On to slide 5, please. So here's a short inventory of the artifacts that we currently have. We do have a goals and we have a scope. We have principles, we have some requirements, we have some use cases, we do have the sandbox, courtesy of the generous people at BioPortal, again, from the generous courtesy, generosity of BioPortal, we have a code base, that would be the fork, and we have a code repository at SEM Web Central, hosted by BDN Raytheon. On to slide 6, please. So we do have some gaps. Gap analysis based on the artifacts that we currently have. We do have these incomplete use cases. We have an incomplete list of functionalities. And as I mentioned, this item about the list of functionalities we'd like OOR to have was brought up about 3 weeks ago. We have incomplete requirements. We haven't done the analysis of the requirements. We have no architecture that's complete that I know of. Maybe Ken can put me in on that. And we don't have an action plan. You know, what do we need to do in terms of which functionalities have to be developed? How will they be developed in parallel for different language representation languages and so on? So my proposed plan is based on a model-driven approach, and of course that means many things to many people. But whatever that model is, and unfortunately at this point it would probably have to be a UML model, I would want to claim that it will provide an organizing and communication mechanism among the parties that want to be involved in this development. It hopefully will ease collaboration, but of course there are the tool issues and some other issues associated with that. I think having this UML model at least will help identify the priorities so it will be easier to see where the functionalities are, where the gaps are, rather than going through and reading lines of code or looking at PowerPoint slides. I think it will provide an appropriate level of abstraction and ease understanding. I think it will facilitate collaboration, I believe it will support parallel efforts depending on how the functionality is partitioned, and Ken will address some of that, I believe. And it will provide a basis for coordination so that we can have parallel efforts going on simultaneously. On to slide 8, please. So, what are the actions? We need to develop the UML model. I've done that in the past for one of the versions of BioPortal. You can reverse engineer it and start from there. We want to be able to then incorporate all of the existing artifacts into that single model. Again, the model-driven approach, so we can trace everything, and you don't have to go running around to different documents, web pages, or whatever. It'll be part of the CM repository where the code resides. They'll provide the HTML reports, which can be generated by some of the tools on the wiki pages and point the people to the model itself. So the next item we have to do is gather up those proposed functionalities. We have to, you know, what are they? What should they be? Vet them, understand the logical entailment and the relationships to each other, whatever they may be, prioritize them, and then just decide, you know, what we think needs to be done first and second and so on. And then people can have at it. And we do want to be able to identify the parallel contributing projects, which Peter's already done some of, and then choose a point of contact so we don't have to run around to 5 or 6 people. Of course, I don't know if the people will want to take on that responsibility, but again, that would facilitate the development and help continue the development of OOR. So with that, Michael, do you have anything you'd like to add or say?
Not at this point. I'm going to reserve my comments for the end when I have my slot coming up.
Okay.
I mean, you did a great job of doing the overview. I had more partisan comments.
Right. Well, there are, as I said, several of the other speakers are going to address some of the items I've brought up here in more detail, so I don't want to waste everyone's time at this point. So with that, first speaker up is a presentation by Mike Dean. Mike couldn't be with us today, but Peter will give his presentation on his behalf. Peter.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Michael. So I brought up the slide deck that's called number 2, Dean Young. Moving on to the second, so this is sort of a status on the OOR code repository, which is supposedly going to come up imminently, and which provides the beginning of the fork from the BioPortal code base.
Peter?
So going on. Yes?
Excuse me, gentlemen. The code repository is there at FedWeb, Web Central.
Yes.
So it's active right now.
I mean, I know. I mean,
I'm sorry.
The container is there, but the code isn't.
Okay.
So that's what I mean by coming up. On to slide number 2, the first bullet points to the link where people can find the page for the project on Standard Central. And there's a subversion repository which can be accessed by this link, group ID 152. It's not populated yet. We have been waiting for an appropriate time, and that appropriate time has just shown up because we thought that working from a point whereby the implementation of the customization, the UI customization that's generated through I18N approach would be extremely helpful. And thanks to Paul Alexander and Natasha, that's available. I don't think we have put that onto the OR sandbox yet. That tag number would be the starting point of the fork. There will be public read access to the code repository. For write and commit, one will need to be registered and be approved of a contributor account, which Mike Dean and Ken Dabrowski, who also co-championing the administration of the code repository, will be happy to help you. So if you're planning to commit code and haven't already contacted Mike or Ken, this will be the first that you can get, you can start committing code. I mean, people can download code without creating an account. This has public root access. So on to slide number 3. This is Mike Dean. The my is Mike Dean. Mike Dean's development is the RADA. Okay. So first and foremost, we are grateful to the folks from NCBO BioPortal to have provided us with the code base to start with. So the first things first, we are hoping to continue incorporating enhancements from BioPortal and hopefully be able to contribute. So we want to stay close to BioPortal as much as we can. Obviously, as an example, we're pulling up the internationalization, like customization port, which I just mentioned. The other part is the Raytheon BDN people had previously developed in some federation codes, and my desire is to see how that could merge back into the BioPortal. So we want to stay very close to BioPortal. And the next step in development that would be major one to support multiple people to install different instances for the team, for their development, or for proprietary repositories and so on. We want to provide virtual machine images so that the installation or implementation of an additional instance could be very easy. So that's one thing that is going to happen from the OR team. The second, and somewhat a bottleneck for us, because up to now we only have one single instance called the OOR sandbox. We are actually committed to run 3 different instances at least. A sandbox instance where we have fairly lax contribution and gatekeeping requirements, so that people just upload stuff, kick the tires, and so on. But then we are supposed to be running at least one public instance, which we will call the production OR instance. That is not in place yet, partly because we don't have the gatekeeping mechanism in place. It's supposedly the place for people to go to when they want to download or access open ontologies. And with that, some of the gatekeeping requirements have been talked about during the 2008 Ontology Summit, as well as the work that Jen Klausky and this group is doing in terms of implementing those. We've also talked about doing extensions on OMV so that we will be consistent with OMV, the ontology metadata vocabulary that a lot of other folks are implementing. And of course, very exciting, especially after last Thursday's session on common logic support. One major thrust will be for the OR team is to provide common logic support in the OR, so that besides RDF, OVO languages, we will be able to support common logic in the repository. Going on to slide number 5. There is an upcoming opportunity. And I guess as a team, we should seriously look at how we could capitalize on that opportunity. This is the semantic repository for the web workshop, which Alexander Garcia and all is co-organizing, and quite a few of us will be there. Natasha Noy, myself, Mike Dean, of course, he's a very active person in this week's organization. So quite a few of us will be there, and there's a huge opportunity because of the size of the gathering, and because this time this week is going to be in Shanghai, and we are literally moving into territories that very few of us have been active in previously. So the opportunities are there. Maybe within the next few meetings, we could talk about how we could make the best out of the opportunity and spread the OR word at this serious workshop. I hope Alex Garcia will be joining us later, because I mean, he could talk a little bit about that too, being the key lead organizer of that event. That's about what Mike has prepared. So thank you, and I will pass this back to Michael and Todd.
Thank you, Peter, and Michael Dean, thank you also. So if there are no questions for Peter and his ability to interpret Mike telepathically, let's move on to Natasha. Natasha was very nice to come and join us today and provide some of her insight, hopefully, about the things we should not do and perhaps things we should do. So, Natasha, if you're ready.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Todd. Thank you, Peter. So, these are the notes. They're not just my personal notes. It's something that we sort of discussed within the development team here at MCBO. So that was Paul Alexander and Michael Dorf. And so here are just some of our ideas in terms of what might or might not work for working. And it's also, so the main thing is it sort of depends on the kind of requirements and assumptions. So next slide, please. So the question that we have in terms of, so we're actually trying to answer two questions, how we can help OR, and in some sense how OR can help advanced biopoint as well. And so the first question is, where will the repository reside? So there was some discussion earlier on of having it on the NCBO GeForge. So Peter mentioned that Mike has set up SVN on SEMrush Central. We're actually also discussing internally the possibility of having a GitHub instance, a GitHub repository, because it makes it actually easier to fork different versions. And while we're not committed to moving Barbottle to GitHub, we're actively exploring that possibility. And in fact, being able to have OR forks there would be one of the driving factors for that. So the advantage, of course, from our point of view, on having something more central, that would be that it would be easier to, you know, integrate the code back in, for example, into Barbottle. Whether that, I mean, our OR may not care about that or realize that, but it's something to consider. So what we were also sort of, at least the feedback from our developers, and Paul, if he's on the call, might comment more if there are questions, is that GitHub versus SVN would actually make it easier for people to fork the code and, you know, to hack around and create their own version. So it's something in any case that you might want to consider. We'll be happy to post the fork code, but again, if someone's central posting it, we don't need to do anything. I prepared my slides before SO Mike, as is obvious here. Next slide, please. So another question is, so one thing that we would really like to happen is to sort of, in particular since OR in some sense is starting from the code that we have, is to have some sort of coordination of the features, because, I mean, all of us have a large list of desired features, and they, to some extent, overlap, to some extent, they don't. And it would be nice if, you know, the top three features in our list and the top three features that OR is working on complementary rather than, you know, we're all working on the same thing. We're primarily, but as I even said, we're primarily driven by what we have promised in our renewal proposal and what our specific user requirements are. So we'll have a set of, dozen collaborators, and they very much, mostly from the medical community, and they very much drive what we're doing and what our priorities are. But sort of our question to this group is, what are the next sort of three big things on the agenda, and can we make sure that somehow we can actually coordinate and not do the same thing at the same time? Realizing that our user community may be different from our user community. And maybe, and sort of the next question is, I don't think it's on my next slide, but I should bring it up, how much of the sort of integration do we want to keep, or do we just work and kind of move on and just be aware of each other's developments, or do we try to keep the code in such a way that it's easier to integrate things back and forth? Next slide, please. So just to sort of step up to the plate and say that, you know, in terms of coordinating, it would be nice to know what the next steps are. So from our side, the things that are happening probably this, I would say this fall, or, you know, within the next six months, so very near-term agenda is, first of all, for those of you who have looked at the code, you know that ontology mappings were essentially kind of slapped onto it and they're sitting on the front end, so we're now migrating them to the back end, creating support for all different types of metadata mappings, creating a set of much more reliable and much more extensive REST services to provide access to mappings, and allowing people to post mappings as well for REST services. Structured nodes, which we rolled out this summer, we'll be extending them with a few new features and sort of trying to give them, to really keep the tires on them. We're also having, you know, had about half a dozen requests to install an instance of BioPortal. We decided that we need to bite the bullet and create a virtual image. But people are asking, so we also need a virtual image that includes things like the annotator, which a lot of people ask, and that's where really the complexity of installation comes in. So we have some things, but we haven't tested it yet. We have a couple of collaborators who are interested in installing their own instances, so hopefully that we will test that. Support for OAuth 2, we're getting more and more requests for that, which means for us basically integrating another loader and another sort of ontology retrieval manager that will use the OAuth API as opposed to the Protege API that works only with Protege 3. And we're also working on updates to the security framework. In part, I mean, we've had several requests for that, but it was also precipitated in the discussion we had on the last call with Ken in terms of what happens if, you know, you publish all our post calls. You know, people can just start posting to our services and post all kinds of garbage. So basically, we will implement a framework where you will have to have, you know, BioPortal username and password in order to and pass that as parameters to you. And basically to authenticate with that in order to be able to post anything. And that would also be our springboard to the what we call My BioPortal, which basically provides different levels of visibility for some ontologies. So a number, most of the ontologies that we have now are public and available to everyone. We have lots of requests for ontologies to host ontologies that require licensing. Many of these are broad licenses, and you know, you just have to go and sign a form and say, you know, yes, you know, I live in a particular country. But nonetheless, we can't have them completely open, so we're working on having various mechanisms for, you know, if you don't log in, you see this set of ontologies. If you log in, you see additional ontologies, and the same works through REST services. So these are our short-term agenda. Next slide, please. Some longer-term, something that we have in our NCBO renewal. We'll be migrating the backend entirely to Triple Store, which would also involve developing sort of a generic clause-based model to represent all different types of ontologies so that we don't have, you know, one store for all ontologies, one store for our ontologies, one store for UMLS ontologies, having something that's a bit more generic. And, of course, federation capabilities, although we haven't quite determined what our specific requirements are going to be and kind of which way the federation will go. But we definitely need something, and there are more and more requests for that. Next slide, please. If there is that one, next slide. Probably that's it. Is that the last one?
That's the last one.
Yeah, okay, so that's it then.
Thank you, Natasha. You also answered one of the questions that's on the chat that was on the chat room, the chat board about the...
Oh, let me get into the chat room. Yeah, I'm not in yet.
Okay. Oh. Well, you answered the question, so that's okay. Thank you. We'll try and take you up on your suggestions, and I think that's one of the first, your second slide there, what do we need to do? We haven't decided yet. However, hopefully we can work together as much as possible. So our next speaker is Emmanuel Norman. He's going to be talking about more service orientation to the OOR. So, Emmanuel, are you ready?
Yeah, here I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can.
Hello?
Yes.
Okay.
Can hear you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. My talk will be more update for more service orientation to the thoughts and open ontology repository. Actually, to open existing ontology repositories in some sense. So I don't propose an architecture or a work agenda or so, but I want to push it a bit in the direction, the whole project. Slide two, please. As it is announced, the key issue of our today's session is how to incorporate various ongoing OOR-related software development efforts. And, of course, here in Uni Bremen, we have some OOR-related software, and I can report our efforts how to incorporate it. But let me make a note on the word incorporation, that to me it sounds a bit like going in a bit wrong direction. Namely, it sounds that we're going to have a fork of BioPortal and the OOR-related software other people, third-party people are developing, should become part of that BioPortal, or not BioPortal, but the fork of the BioPortal, the OOR. But I think that's not the way a software-oriented architecture should look like. And if we recall the Ontology Summit 2008 communique, towards an open ontology repository, there explicitly it was stated that the core approach for the open ontology repository is a federated service-oriented architecture, and so on. So that means implicitly that the OOR should be a loose coupled system, and I think what is meant by that is in particular that it's a loose coupled web services. And slide three, please. And now let's have a look at BioPortal. I have taken that figure from the NCBO Architecture Roadmap Report 2008. It's probably outdated, but anyway, I think it reflects the general approach that is still holding in BioPortal. Namely that we have a kind of all-in-one solution in that sense that a whole functionality is packed into one platform and more precisely into one framework. Here it is the Spring framework and the Java platform. And as a web service, yes, there is a web service. It is a web service. It offers service via the RESTful interface. And via this RESTful interface, you can access all the inside functionality, like what we can see here is Protégé LexGrid and several other modules like annotation management, mapping, and project management, and so on. Slide four, please. So there are many components which we could call loosely coupled, but only in the sense of the specific framework Spring, and which is running on the specific platform Java. But SOAR, I think, should facilitate service connection across frameworks and platforms. And actually, that's not so much the case in BioPortal, which is the cause that it hampers the collaboration or the integration or connection to third-party software or ontology related software, like, for instance, ours. So let me report from our tools. So next slide, slide five, please. So first of all, there is the HATS architecture, the heterogeneous toolset. I don't want to go in detail and present all the functionality and features because that was presented last week in detail. But it is certainly relevant for the, or could be certainly relevant for the ontology community in that it's, I just want to list some of the main features that are relevant. For instance, that you have a format translation or logic translation. I think that's a very specific feature for the HATS system, and that it supports many, many logics and can translate from one logic to the other. And it supports linking ontologies via a structural language, which is far beyond the old import features. And you can align ontologies via HATS, and lots of reasoners are connected to HATS, like the classical ontology reasoners like Palace Effect and Razor, but also theory improvers from the ATP community like SPAS and Vampire and so on. So it's certainly useful, and in fact we are using HATS for our work and research in ontology engineering. So the second tool, slide six please, is the TNT base, which is basically a XML database plus versioning. And the special features we appreciate here is that we have a real versioning, because the underlying versioning mechanism is the version, so that you can do all the stuff like collaborate in parallel and merge parallel developed ontologies automatically and so on. And we have enhanced search and indexing mechanism due to the XML facilities like part of the XML databases, of course, or the XML languages like XPath, XQuery, XUpdate, and so on. And with these XML languages, we can extract, for instance, also fragments of an ontology, and we can compute structural difference between two XML documents, so old documents, and it allows also pre- and post-processing scripting, which is quite useful, for instance, if you upload an ontology and you want to have automatically translated into, say, the newest old version, old 2.0, or for validation or quality checking, and so on. Next slide, please, slide seven. Now, when we are trying, or we are still on the way trying, or connecting TNT base and HATS and BioPortal to some extent. The problem here is that we experienced that it was not so straightforward to install and get BioPortal running. And what we wanted to have is to replace the file-based database of BioPortal by TNT base, because we wanted to have that real versioning features and all the XML query features. And we finally managed by thanks to the RESTful interface offered in BioPortal. But anyway, since it is such a huge system and there are some components we actually don't need, for instance, LexGrid or Lucene or other components inside the Spring framework, but we have to, since it is a whole application, we have to somehow install it too, and we have to configure all that, and it's a lot of work and lots of effort. And I think that was something that could be decoupled. It should be maybe some of these components should be rather standalone modules and connected via web interface. And also with HATS, we not yet integrated HATS to BioPortal. But here, for instance, the idea would be as you, when you upload, for instance, in Ontology, and now in BioPorted is that the way it is, it works, it is that Protégé or the old API parses the Ontology and validates it. But for instance, if we want to upload an Ontology in a different language like Castle or Common Logic or any other logic, which is well supported by the HET system, it's not so easy to integrate HETs in the workflow. So after uploading that, it's automatically a Castle, say a Castle Ontology is automatically validated and, I don't know, checked for consistency and so on. And then after that, stored in the database, inside TNT base. Next slide, slide 8, please. So the problems here are, is that for TNT base, it is not an relational database, but it is an XML database. So it does not fit exactly to the framework that is given in BioPorter. So that was one experience. The other is, I think, and it's the more critical, the HET system is not implemented in Java, but in Haskell. So it is no choice to integrate in Spring framework. There must be a cross-platform communication, and that's what I advocate for, namely a web service kind of connection. So that gives me two use case scenarios or workflow scenarios. Slide 9, please. For instance, a simple use case scenario would be that the user wants to explore a fragment of a certain old Ontology version in Common Logic. So what would happen here? The user, it's connected to BioPorter via the user interface, and that extracts or makes a request to extract a fragment of an Ontology. This could be done or accomplished by a TNT base. Then you can say, give me an Ontology of a certain version, and I give you a signature also, and then extract a fragment that contains all the concepts of this given signature. And now you have that fragment, you can send it to HETS, and HETS translates it from old to, say, Common Logic. So this would be a workflow that could imagine as a web service, composition of web services. Or take a more complex use case scenario, slide 10, please. I don't want to go in detail, but just briefly. So for instance, imagine, we want to match, and that's actually what we did, match pairwise a set of ontologies that are in different logics. So what is involved here is, again, the HET system that translates logics and the matching system, of course, the first step. For instance, in our case, in our experiments, it was Falcon. And next step, say, given a set of concepts, extract those modules from these ontologies that contain synonym concepts to the input concepts. So what we want to have here is a module extraction. A tool that can do that is the Palette system, exactly. And now the next step, we want to merge these extracted modules and check it for consistency. Merging is supported by HETS. Consistency could be checked, for instance, with SPARSE or any other reasoning tool. And then we want to present it as a graph somewhere. So ontology supports translating the outcome of the ontology merge as a graph structure and to have a nice layout. Graph this might be involved, and in the end, Firefox might render it. So there are several tools involved here, and they are certainly not all implemented in Java, and they are not all part of one platform. And how the way they can connect or could connect is via web service, I think. What I have done so far, actually, this workflow I I handcrafted it via scripts and piping and in a very ad hoc manner. But my vision would be to have a web service composition workflow to accomplish such kinds of use case scenario. So last slide, please, conclusion. So our observation is that many of our R-related software is usually developed in different platforms and frameworks and also programming languages. And in order to take advantage of these tools in our envisioned OOR, it should be software-oriented architecture. And I think it's also very easy to extend the existing tools, at least that is, I can say that for the HAT system and also for TNT base, to extend it to real web service. In fact, TNT base is already a web service, but heads could be made more kind of web service. So I think that would push the OOR development to a great extent and get more contributors. So the final question for us or for me is that a coordination issue and how to collaboratively coordinate the development of an OOR. First two presentations there were already some proposals to do that via UML diagrams and so on, but I think it was still very much from the buyer portal view and still committed to a framework, to Java, to Spring framework and so on. And I think what would at least help us would be to define web service interfaces. And to do that right, I think it is necessary to carefully analyze use cases. And I think what is going in the correct or right direction, at least from my point of view, or a productive direction, is what is already initiated by Kamaglowski with the collection of use cases. And that's the point where I want to stop my talk, and I think it's the right point to hand over to Ken. Thank you.
Thank you, Emmanuel. Let me point out that on your last slide there, one of the principles of the OOR in terms of architecture was it's supposed to be platform independent. So we certainly agree with that view. And yes, to be platform independent, you certainly have to specify the interfaces specifically or exactly, whether they're web services or a Corva or something else, sort of irrelevant. But one of the goals of OOR was to provide a description of the OOR in such a fashion that anyone could just pull up their specification down and write their code or whatever, and it would work. We're not there yet. So we certainly agree with your conclusion. And I believe Ken Kuklowski from Northeastern will tell us more when he gives us some examples of architecture and interfaces. So, Ken, if you're ready.
Yes, I'm very happy to hear from the other speakers, especially the previous speaker, Emmanuel. I don't think we met before. I'm certainly completely in agreement with all of your suggestions, and in fact, it leads very well into what I'm going to talk about, which is suggestions for architecture and the interfaces for the OOR. So if you look at the second slide, can you see slide two now? Just a brief outline, I'm going to talk about the requirements for the OOR, and then I'll move on to talk about the architecture. And then I'll go into more detail and discuss the work I've done on development of interfaces. I also looked at the fifth part, what we have right now in BioPortal for the data model. But as Natasha has pointed out, this is clearly in flux. It's going to be developed quite a bit in the near future. And finally, I'll talk about possible future work, which will overlap some of the things that have been said so far and perhaps a little bit that is new. then on slide three, so I'll begin, let me talk a little bit about the requirements. The requirements can be divided up into sort of general goals, non-functional requirements, which, things like being able to scale up and so on. And then the more detailed functional requirements in the form of use case descriptions. And I'd very much like to see more contributions to the list of use case descriptions that we already have. Using the use case description ontology, you can indicate the workflows, including primary and alternate workflows. And I have a link there to the wiki page where we have the OOR requirements. So what I did on slide four is just repeat the general OOR goals, well-maintained persistent store, mechanisms for governing and registering ontologies. I've given other talks, and we have done a lot of work on the governance issue, and we do have a gatekeeping module, which we're in the process of trying to integrate with the code as a separate component. And then, of course, there would also be services across disparate artifacts, which Emmanuel talked about very well. And of course, registration of somatic services to support peer OORs so that we have a federated system of OORs. On slide five, I listed the non-functional requirements, which I believe were also mentioned by Todd earlier on. So I guess I won't go over that again, although I think it might be a little different from what he said, but essentially the same thing. So then on slide six, these are the use case diagram for the OOR, based on the OOR use case descriptions. And I think clearly this is going to have to be further developed as we get more examples of use cases, such as what we just received from Emmanuel, and so we get a better feeling for exactly how we can govern ontologies and how they can be, how we can deal with those use cases that he mentioned. So then moving on to slide seven, so switch to architecture. So first look again at the goals and some of the targets for modularity. And finally I'll give a proposed initial architecture, which obviously will need a lot of work. So on slide eight, these were the goals that have been already mentioned in other documents for the OOR. So it should be an open and well-documented architecture. We want multiple communities and organizations to participate. And of course, that's standard on functionalities and behaviors. And then we have various principles, such as decoupling responsibilities, platform and implementation dependence that the manual has already emphasized. And of course, we'd like it to be ontology-driven. So some of the targets for modularity, then, would be the registry functions and the repository functions, which kind of separate those two. The various languages that can be supported, again, clearly there would have to be separate modules for those, and as well as translators. Then, of course, you want to have gatekeeping policies so that ontologies can be developed in a manner of essentially the same as developing standards. And, of course, it would also be nice to have intellectual property rights. We just had a couple of very interesting and very informative meetings about intellectual property rights. And so it would seem appropriate that we would have a module which would support policies that would enforce these rights. Then federation mechanisms, which have already been worked on by my dean, should also be a module. And of course, have the ability to add new services. So moving on to the slide 10. This is, as I say, just an initial proposed architecture to try to deal with some of these issues. So we have a GUI front end, which operates on the workflow service. That's the gatekeeper, which is kind of the front end that handles all issues such as policies, who's allowed to see what, who's allowed to do what, when those actions are to take place. Workflow service then would interact with the registrar, which is responsible for the uploading registration of ontologies and metadata. And then, of course, you have a query service, which is it can be quite elaborate. And when I talk about the API in a moment, you'll see that that's an important part of the service. And it would also be nice to separate out as a component the knowledge base so that you could have, in principle, these multiple ways of representing your ontologies and your metadata. And, of course, there's also the issue of federation. You need to be able to federate with other instances of the OOR. And I indicated there where you have a federator interacting with another external federator of another system, and they would communicate back and forth with each other. That would have to be administered via a GUI. So then, moving on to the next part of the... Hello?
And may I interrupt and mute everyone and try to get back in with the start to because the line quality is getting worse and worse. Go ahead, start to Ken.
Okay, so I hope I'm back.
Yes, you're back.
Okay, great. Now the next part, so I did some work on developing interfaces, both Waddle and Whistle, for the OR based on the BioPortal code. The code that I had did not have a did not cleanly bring out all of the REST interfaces. Hopefully that'll be remedied by the BioPortal people very shortly. But in order to do that, basically I removed the RESTlet code and replaced it with JAX-RS-based Jersey code, and that way I could just generate the model. So the idea of REST is that it uses URL formatting and parameters are strings of various kinds. Path, query form, matrix, header, cookie. There, it's quite a variety of different ways that you can pass parameters in to a REST service, and your service does have to distinguish them and take appropriate action for the various kinds of parameter. So REST interfaces can get quite complicated, but fortunately there are good tools like Jersey that help you with that. Then the Whistle or SOAP interface I also developed. Using the BioPortal code. And this is, in many ways, SOAP is a whole lot simpler because it uses a uniform XML format for parameters and return values, and therefore it's simpler in many ways than the REST. At least, there's certainly advantages for REST, but in terms of simplicity of specification of parameters, SOAP definitely has an advantage. And it also maps operations to methods, and the XML parameters can be mapped directly to objects. So anyway, I didn't particularly see any reason to distinguish, or to make a judgment about whether REST is better or SOAP is better. I just provided both. And it's easy enough then to have a service which supports both of them and they're compatible with each other, and that's just what I did. Let me talk a little bit about what that now looks like. As I said, on the next slide, 12, I used JAX-RS in Jersey. I specify the URL mapping by means of annotations. and then generated the local file, which then is the formal definition of the interface. Then, in order to make sure that the model, the REST and SOAP are compatible with each other, I just have the various resource methods of the REST service call, just call the SOAP method, so that, you know, it really, SOAP is the underlying service, and the REST is just calling that service internal to the component. But you can then, as I say in a moment, invoke the SOAP methods directly. So I actually set this up, and the refactored code runs very nicely on Tomcat, and I did some testing, and it seems to work just fine. So it should be possible, but I haven't done this yet, but to fully integrate it with the rest of the system, and then have this REST service with the formal definition DO model. Then I also, as I say, on slide 13, Whistle SOAP interface, I derive that by basically taking the BioPortal service classes, which were already very nicely set up, and all I had to do is just put all of their methods together and generate the Whistle from it using Java Web Services. So there are now, what I found, there were 126 methods in the interface, and I've categorized them in the on the slide there. So you see there's ontology registration, there's a lot of methods for finding ontologies, methods for searching and navigation within a single ontology, methods for computing differences between ontologies, methods for evaluation and metrics on ontology, notification and subscription services. There was some methods for generating RDF, and presumably those will be expanded as more formats are supported. There are quite a number of ontology development type methods that would support ontology development. And finally, there's this kind of basic administration method. I have actually, if you wish to take a look at the Whistle and the SOAP API, just use that link on the 14th slide, and hopefully that'll bring up a page where you can take a look at those. As I say, there were I wrote up the SEI, but the Whistle was then generated from it. And on this slide 14, I show just a few examples of what those what three of those methods look like. Find latest active ontology view versions, some query execution. You notice it's execute query 1, execute query 2. In Whistle, you cannot have overloading of method names. In Java, you can certainly have different methods that have the same name but different parameters. You cannot do that in a web service. So I had to actually distinguish them by putting 1, 2, 3. Etc. Other than that, it's almost exactly the same as the service calls that were already in the BioPortal code. So I made a real effort to make sure that it was almost exactly the same, and that there wouldn't be any difficulty with porting any new code, bringing in any new code from BioPortal as it evolves. On slide 15. I then took a look at the data model for how data is stored, and this is probably going to be out of date very quickly as Portal evolves, but it certainly could be useful as a point, as an initial point to discuss what the data model should be for OOR. I think it would be very important that that we separate the data storage component from the basic services. So keep the modularity and have separate have separate web service components for them. So on slide 16 and 17, I showed what I managed to extract as the current data model is being used. Perhaps people at the Natasha and the other people at the NCDO could correct me if I made a mistake here, but this is what I managed to find from the SQL that I had. So I basically just converted this into UML, showing the various classes and their relation and their associations with each other. There's one class there called metadata on slide 17, which is used for, I believe that's what is actually used for the storage of the ontologies. All the others are concerned with various forms of metadata, administrative work, and such. So the there's the metadata structure. So then moving on to slide 18, this is my last slide. So, in looking at all of this, I thought about some of the possibilities we should think about for future work. One of them is that we should be able to, it makes sense then to refactor the database component as a separate, all the database work as a separate component rather than just be a module within the Java program. And it would also, I think, be nice to split the core into two components, possibly more, but I think at least two, one for handling querying and another for handling registration. Then, of course, the work that we're doing right now is to integrate the gatekeeper, which has already been developed but has not yet been integrated with it. It's the gatekeeper, for those who might not know this, is based on the ISO standard 1179. The terminology that you see in the use cases is taken from 1179. And we also need to develop and integrate the federator based on the work that Mike Dean has already done. And based on what Emmanuel has now said, it seems to be like we should consider adding still more possibilities for components into the architecture. Another thought that I guess I didn't mention, in the process of refactoring the code and developing the whistle and soap, we now have the possibility of running the service standalone without being within a container. So I actually have run it in a standalone basis, in containerless. And that would act by doing that, you could actually simplify some of the installation because you no longer have to install something like Tomcat or GlassFish if you didn't want to. It's just thought. This is I'm not saying that you'd have to do it that way. You can do it with the container or without. But I think it gives you more flexibility. And for those who don't want to have an elaborate, I'll just say a personal, somebody wants to just install one of these ORs for their own personal use, it would be nice to have it be on a standalone basis. So I think that's all I have to say, and I guess we can now move on to the next speaker.
Thank you, Ben.
Good talk.
Yeah, you've given us some good ideas, and actually during your talk, what occurred to me is perhaps an implicit assumption I had made, which is false, is that depending on the language, it may be the case that, for instance, the whole back end is a completely separate component. That is, I believe from what I've heard over the last couple of years, we've all sort of assumed that, for instance, the persistence mechanism, i.e. the MySQL or whatever, triple store, would be the same for all of the languages that OOR would try to support. And it may be the case that that's a completely wrong assumption. So maybe common logic needs a completely different storage mechanism than OWL or RDF or something else. So we should keep that in mind, and then that would again support the modularity that we definitely need. However, as Ken pointed out, and as I've seen on some of the chat dialogue, it may be the case that for a particular language, for instance, Common Logic, it will require a whole bunch more functionality, or can support a whole bunch more functionality that the common OOR functionality by itself does not support. So again, we still have to get back to the specification, and Ken's diagrams here provide us a good starting point. But so Ken, with regard to the work that you've done, in particular the UML diagrams and that architecture diagram, is that work available for us to peruse?
Okay, let's see. I have already posted the architecture diagram somewhere else, but it's just a diagram.
But what about the whole model behind it? Did you draw that by hand? Did you reverse engineer it, or?
My proposed architecture? It's just a UML diagram. I can give that to you.
Okay, and Peter was asking that the link on your OOR interface doesn't seem to be active.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
And could you post
maybe that happened as a result of transforming it into PDF.
Could you post
it? Can I post? Is it okay if I just post this on the
chat?
On the chat board?
Yes.
All right. So let me do that. I'll get that to you in just a second.
Okay. Well, thank you, Ken. So, Peter, is Alex with us today?
Let's find out. Alex Garcia, are you online? You need to do a star 3 to
unmute. Now, Peter, I noticed on the webpage that there are no slides available for Alex. Is that correct?
Not that I have received. No. But I did get a response from him saying that he will be joining us.
I thought there was an issue of transport.
No, that's Emmanuel.
Oh, so Emmanuel is successful.
Okay, I guess we might as well move forward.
Okay, perhaps Alex will be able to join us after Michael. So our next speaker is Professor Michael Gruninger from the University of Toronto. He's going to tell us about the calorie contribution. Michael, are you out there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
And actually, I didn't provide any slides, and this will be rather brief. Partly because I'm still rather pessimistic from the Common Logic side. But I just like one quick comment. I think that Emmanuel's talk actually does give me some more hope, because in a sense a lot of the functionality that we are considering for Calore would be subsumed by some of the functionality of HET. So if we can get an integrated repository that combines BioPortal and HET, then the problems that get solved in that merger would solve the problems with Calore as well. So that's one, I guess, ray of hope here. but the reason that I have been kind of pessimistic is that there seem to be problems at both the front end and the back end. So on the back end, if there has been a lot of material here on the chat, particularly from Cameron. So on the back end, so we've seen how BioPortal will be migrating, for example, to using a triple store, which is not going to work in general for Common Logic. Right away, if that's the foundation for BioPortal, it's going to have to be a completely different back end for Common Logic. Now, on the front end, though, there is similar challenges, although I guess the front end may be an easier thing to do, but in a lot of sense, a lot of the functionality for BioPortal kind of comes out of that visual interface that allows people to browse and navigate a lot of the human-centered interaction with repositories through that interface. And so one of the things has been that within BioPortal, kind of resting on a lot of the earlier experiences with Protégé, you're essentially browsing through classes, a very class-centric kind of perspective, kind of ultimately coming from Alan Protégé. And so what you're really doing is browsing a graph in which the nodes are classes. And Natasha may be correct me on this point, too. I'm not really sure if the current interface for Biportal can even represent arbitrary relations beyond subclass. I haven't checked lately. Whereas in Colore, and incidentally in Hetz, as the if people go to the OR presentation from last week, where John Bateman and Phil Mostofsky gave a demonstration of gave a little video demonstration for Hetz. In both of these, there are the graph essentially that you're browsing is a graph of ontologies. So the nodes are ontologies now. They are not classes within an ontology. They are actually separate and distinct ontologies. And the relationships between ontologies are the arcs in this graph, right? Are the relationships between ontologies. And so this is a very different kind of perspective. So whereas, you know, Biportal is kind of moving into the idea of a more explicit representation of mappings between ontology, in Colore, and I believe also in Hetz, the mappings are basically the only relationships that you're capturing in the interface. The relations within the ontology are actually still in the underlying kind of ontology file. You're not really browsing those because most of you're looking mainly at arbitrary sentences in a language like common logic to represent the axioms. So this is why I have been rather pessimistic. So we have problems at the back end, we have problems at the front end. Now, the other discussions that have been going on, and that's particularly Emmanuel's presentation, the question then and the challenge would be, what are the kind of the common services that we can abstract away from Biportal, so that effectively there is this kind of common core of services that can be can work with different backends and potentially different front ends. I have no clue as to what those would possibly be. Ken's presentation it was rather intriguing. The URL diagram, Ken, had a box just for ontology. And so that kind of, on the one hand, would perhaps indicate that we can plug in different formats for that underlying ontology, or it might mean that there may be some details that are kind of missing there. But that's going to be the challenge here, in a lot of ways, it's not just a question of having a different syntax, you know, language with a different syntax. It really, in a lot of ways, is a very different perspective. With common logic, our ontology is a very axiom-based that you don't often browse a relation independently of all these other axioms. You have none of the restrictions of OWL and RDF in those expressions as well. And also the focus being on the relationships between ontologies. So but this kind of captures kind of our thoughts right now. I didn't really want to reproduce last week's talk all over again. Particularly Cameron's, if you'll look in last week's presentation, Cameron's presentation gives a very excellent kind of art system architecture perspective for where Colore would be going. And that would probably be the place where we should kind of start looking at how those architectures are related to each other.
That is
so it's brief. I wanted to kind of, mainly talk, have discussions. So.
Okay. So I guess, Peter, if you want to unmute everybody, we can have at it. Now, what I've heard from, I'm sorry, Michael?
Nope.
Oh. From what I've heard now from more than one speaker is that we need to identify what those common functionalities are that are, if you like, language independent. And that would give us a basis for decomposition and understanding how the various languages that need to be supported may have to be supported independently. And as I suggested previously before Michael's talk, maybe the whole back end is actually completely different. So that's perfectly okay. I mean, from a deployment perspective, this might be a pain in the butt. But in order to support the goals of OOR, maybe that's what needs to be done, and there might not be other options. So, does anyone have any suggestions on how we might like to proceed after we've now heard these thoughts and have some notion that appears to be a consensus of what needs to be done? And as I suggested in the beginning, we really need to identify or develop an action plan, and one of the first items there is to figure out what are those common functionalities and then press on.
Actually, Todd, if I could just interject one kind of brief point too is, you people sometimes, you know, will use the word federated, and I really don't like that sort of idea in the extreme either, to have different backends for different languages, because then that will defeat the purpose of having ontology repositories in general, which would be the ability to connect ontologies that are written in different languages. So, for example, we would want to have ultimately a repository that you could understand the relationship between, say, one of the common logic theories of time versus OWL time. You know, so you would want to be able to have both of those in the same sort of environment to be able to understand the relationship. And if we had different backends for different languages, we would not have that kind of integration. So
that's not true, Michael. That's not necessarily the case. What I would then say, if based on my presumption, is that it has to be another component that would allow this crosstalk. So, yes, you're right that these additional functionalities need to be there to provide the value we envision. But from an architectural perspective, it may be the case that in order to support the multiple languages in a reasonable fashion to allow parallel development, for instance, this additional capability would itself have to be another, if you like, distinct component that has to work with the other two.
Okay. So that, I guess that could be a possibility, but we'll definitely have to elaborate this requirement as early as possible.
Yeah, so
otherwise we'll end up with something that's just too divergent, and it's a loose confederation of warring states rather than a federation.
Well, warring states? I don't know. But again, what are those functionalities and what do they entail? So if the requirement is to have the ability to compare ontologies from different languages, okay, what does that entail? And then go from there. But starting out, we don't even have a clear list, distinct list, shall we say, of what the basic functionalities are, and then add on to it and prioritize them and so on. So it looks like we have some people. Cameron wants to talk. So I'll turn that over to you, Peter, to control.
That is for people who have remarks to make to press the hand button.
It looks like Cameron has his hand up.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, yeah, you're loud and clear.
Okay. So the point I was going to make is perhaps the differences that we see, it looks like if we look at the BioPortal architecture from a common logic perspective, as Michael pointed out, there seems to be differences or challenges in the presentations here, as Natasha mentioned earlier in the discussion thread. In the resource tier, or the interface tier, as we talked about, and also down in the persistence tier with the triple store. This seems to be pretty pervasive throughout the architecture stack. So perhaps there aren't a lot of generalities, this is my first intuition. The generalities that we make might be sort of the trivial ones, right? And won't get us very far. And perhaps this is the reason why we have this multitude of systems in this space and paradigms is because of that.
So, Cameron, by generalities, do you mean commonalities?
Yes.
Ah.
Things that are applicable to also an OWL-based system versus a common logic-based system versus a CASL-based system.
Well, bear in mind that the system you're talking about is a repository.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the basic things I've outlined on previous slides is you want to put stuff into the repository, you want to get stuff out of the repository. Now, in order to get stuff out of the repository, you have to find what you want to get. So there's some basic common functions across all the languages. Then the entailment becomes what the particular language requires or can provide in terms of, say, finding something, in terms of developing it, in terms of consistency checking, and other things. Across all of the languages, I think there may be hope for common provenance information or model.
Absolutely, and Adam Pease made this point Adam Pease made this point last week that, you know, if all we're doing is providing repository type functionality, then you should use one of the existing content management systems out there like SPN or whatever. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. But there's also this idea of supporting reasoning services within the repository. So the commonality would certainly be the repository, the traditional repository type things, like you mentioned, the provenance management, etc.
But then, as Michael was saying, there are these other capabilities that provide additional value. Can I map things? Can I find related ontologies in different languages?
Right, and maybe that's where it really starts to diverge.
Yeah. But again, we have not generated as a community this distinct list. Like, we can clearly identify, here's this functionality, here's that functionality, here's the additional services, value added, here's how they relate to the basic core functionality, here's how they diverge across languages, here's what has to be developed across those languages to support that additional service, and so on.
I think that, just to go back one step here, I think that even those common features like provenance, I believe that they have to be implemented with attention paid to being language neutral. Right, because BioPortal has language in it at all the tiers that are very OWL-centric.
Yes, I don't think they were trying to disguise that in any fashion.
Right, yeah.
Not necessarily OWL-centric, but class-centric for sure, yes. Absolutely.
Sure.
The user community that we have, which is medical and people in biomedicine, I mean, to them, the class hierarchy is probably the most complex thing that they can handle.
That's very cross-centric, which does
obviously make it far less appropriate for things like common logic. And I'll need to sign off in a few minutes, but one thing in terms of the common interfaces that I wanted to say is sort of one of the things, and again, that may be just too trivial, but if you think of this as a repository of ontologies, which OAR technically is, then even ontology, metadata about the ontologies themselves and evaluations and reviews, that seems to be less dependent on the format of the specific ontology. Whether there's enough content there and it's valuable enough is a different question by itself, without the, say, capability to explore ontologies.
I think we can agree on that. Hopefully. Peter, I see Simon has his hand up.
Could I respond a little bit to what Cameron, the issues Cameron raised? I think those issues are really important ones, but if we want to carry it forward, it would be really helpful if we kind of phrase these issues more precisely in terms of the actual interfaces and architecture. So I think we're reaching the point now where, like, you know, I've actually proposed an architecture, but that's, like I said, just a starting point. Rather than just talk about, well, we need this functionality, we need that functionality, why not actually say, okay, why don't we have this component? And here are the functions, here are the methods that this component must have. And at this point, we do have components, we do have methods, you know, and if somebody is going to formally specify this, if we're going to formally specify this in a way that we can get multiple implementations and a diversity of services that are, you know, platform independent, we have to do it, I think, this way rather than just keep it as natural language discussions. So it's just, I think that would be a good, you know, good at this point to move toward this, I guess, model-driven architecture approach that Todd has advocated.
That's fine. If that will promote things more quickly, I'm all for it. Cameron?
Yeah, I'm just looking at Ken's interface, actually, the Java code. I couldn't agree more.
Great, I'm glad to hear that. So let's start making concrete suggestions about, you know, what works, what isn't going to work, you know, how should we, you know, split, say, some module into other modules or combine or add new functionality.
So we'll start with yours as the guinea pig?
Yeah, I think I can get you that UML model. If I could just send you the XMI, I guess we could post it on the
wiki page?
On the wiki page, or rather, file. In the wiki.
We do have a wiki page for architecture, I believe.
Yeah, that would be the page. Yeah, that'd be a place to put it.
Okay. So Simon, I guess if there's no other rebuttals, Cameron or myself or other suggestions in this area?
One thing I just wanted to make a brief comment on, or just it's been alluded to. This is Simon Spiro from UNC Chapel Hill.
Thank you.
The comment that I wanted to make is that a lot of the basic functionality is common across all kinds of digital repositories. It's only some of the more finer-grained, basically when you're getting down to the, I guess, axiom level, if that's the level that we can break it down to, I don't know if it's on that side of the debate. But, a lot of the functionality that you require for building any type of large-scale distributed semantically enabled repository, just by virtue of what you need to support the general application, supports a lot of the checklist items for ORI. For example, provenance tracking is absolutely essential for all kinds of digital alteration and archiving, and is essential for any kind of semantic reasoning about the contents of repositories. Even more essential when you're reasoning with the contents of the repositories, but you need to know where things came from. And it's same with authentication services. Authentication services are required for any kind of repository. So by looking at what is specific to repositories, semantic repositories of ontologies, as opposed to semantic repositories in general, may split out where other components can be reused or where special code needs to be created. One example of where a generic tool like Subversion can be problematic with ontologies or ontologies that are stored as files as generated by a lot of the common tools, is that in many cases the tool may randomly reorder the ontology so it looks like an entire file has changed and it's only one assertion. And secondly, the metadata about what changes were made to the provenance of an item being stored in a way that is not directly accessible and viewable through the semantic system itself. So it's not available to our annotation. It's a separate mechanism. I just believe that's the debate. Okay, so, end of comment.
Yeah, thank you, Simon. The issue of provenance was beat into us during the original workshop in 2008 by Denise Bedford from the World Bank. She definitely demonstrated the case for the need for extensive provenance and how it can impact or could impact the value that OOR can provide. Anyone else want to comment on metadata? Hearing no takers, Michael, I see you have your hand up.
Yes, I just wanted to kind of, this can be addressed, I could comment on it a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, these are the issues that we were attempting to deal with in the gatekeeping software. So, you know, it's based on 1.1179, and, you know, it's very much concerned with, you know, with the general problem of maintaining provenance, you know, reviewing proposals for changes to an ontology prior to actually making the changes, you know, having like a standards body that would, it's effectively, you know, the standards organization divided up into working groups, you know, to deal with this. So when we developed the Keeper software, we were thinking that it could be a very general tool for any kind of collaborative development of common community documents and resources. So that's one reason why we wanted to separate it into a completely different component, so that it would be something that could be reused elsewhere. So that definitely was a concern for us.
Okay.
Does that help address some of these issues that you raised, Simon? Are you still there, Simon?
As you say, it's covering some of them, but a lot of issues get more complicated, especially when you start looking for, not more complicated, but get more difficult when you start moving up the scale towards ETSA. When you start moving up towards ETSA and ETSA scale repositories, especially if you're going for for systems where there may be multiple different views based on whose updates you're willing to accept. That's one of the openness criteria. It's, for example, you may only be willing to accept changes made by people who are affiliated with certain organizations, but that may be separate from the formal published standards review body. Version may happen at a much finer grained level, and what you're willing to accept as current may be very contingent on your needs at a given time.
I think we addressed that reasonably well. For one thing, we allow different organizations and working groups to have their own policies, and so you can have some groups that are very open and other groups that are very restricted in terms of what can be done, who's allowed to do what, who can see what. So we already have this in place using business rules.
So can I clarify the...
I think we address everything that you say, but... I think we're at least in, working toward that. I appreciate your comments. It sounds like this would be very valuable.
Hey, Ken, where could we review your Gatekeeper capability?
The Keeper, I should be able to just, check with my student and get that and let you review it.
Okay.
We do have a report on it.
It was presented previously.
It was presented at a previous meeting, and my student actually was at the meeting and gave the presentation. So we can give a link to that meeting, Peter.
I'll take it to the checkbook.
Thank you. Well, everybody, I have to go. I want to thank you for your participation, and hopefully we have a consensus to move forward. So have a nice day, wherever you are in the world. Thank you.
Bye. So I guess that falls to me then to keep us going. Peter, how long were we planning on going? Peter?
The moderator has disconnected.
Okay.
Hello?
Peter's gone.
Sorry.
Here.
I'm still here, Michael.
The question?
So Peter?
Yes.
How long did we intend on going? Peter, you're still here. Good.
Right. The original intent is we end in another 15 minutes.
Okay.
But call between Michael and Todd, so your call.
All right. Well, I'll just make one comment, and then we can see if everyone's exhausted. Just to kind of touch on some of Simon's comments. So the other ones that have arisen.
One thing to kind of remember is, like, one of the titles for today, the theme for today was how best to fork from the BioPortal code base. So that's kind of, if the idea is that we're forking from BioPortal, we're not talking necessarily about how we're going to develop a new OOR in general. And I think, and the challenge here, as Cameron noticed, is that, yes, there are, you know, general sorts of functionalities that apply to any repository, not even an ontology repository, just general repository sorts of ideas that can already be handled by things like the version. The challenge is that BioPortal seems to use the underlying ontology representation everywhere, even for those functions that are generic repository kinds of functions. So if we're talking about forking from BioPortal, we're not talking about adding stuff. We're really talking about ripping the guts out of a lot of layers. I'm not sure I don't imagine the BioPortal people have time to do this, but I'm not sure if anyone here has the resources to do that. And another thing would be whether ripping the guts out of BioPortal is going to be any more effective than really doing some of the other things that perhaps Todd and Ken have been kind of proposed, which is almost like a redesign. I don't know.
I would classify what I did as a refactor in the sense that the functionality was not changed, but I did change the code.
Mm-hmm.
The original meaning of refactor was, you know, just rearrange and redo the code to improve it without actually changing what it does.
Yeah, but you may be changing what it does, but we're going to need to change what it accepts, right? I mean, if the current code is making all these assumptions, we're really talking about changing the code at a very deep level.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with you. I wanted to be real modest in what I did at first. No, don't make any changes to the functionality, but it seems clear to me that we do have to do that, and I've given some suggestions, such as, you know, splitting up the core services into more than one component, and you know, adding new methods and possibly changing what some of the methods do. There's, you know, it seems to me that's a reasonable thing to consider. I also saw that it. You're right about, you know, there's certain things that just permeate the code, and did make it quite difficult for me to sort of modularize it. In particular, it does make heavy use of Protégé, and that's a whole huge code base in its own right that I haven't even attempted to look at. Right. Are we going to continue using Protégé in that, you know, really deep way? Protégé code is very, it's not even OWL or RDF-based, it's frame-based.
That's right.
So it's definitely got a real commitment to one particular way of looking at ontologies. It's a very strong commitment to that.
Exactly. So would you even consider that to be a fork, then? Or am I just obsessed with that word because I gave a lecture on it today? Because you're not really forking from the code base anymore. We're really talking about, you know, substantial changes to it.
It's something we as a community, you know, in this initiative have to consider. I mean, it's a way the advantages and disadvantages of diverging in a significant way from the BioPortal.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, yeah, maybe you should. I think we've identified enough issues that I think we have to kind of bite the bullet. One advantage we have is that we're only developing an initial, you know, reference architecture and implementation, a reference implementation. We don't have to produce something that is as as complete and robust as what the bioports people are.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we can leave that for other groups and industry to produce the commercial product.
That's true. That's a good point.
You know, and bioportal is really kind of like, it's industrial strength, commercial product type mode. And I don't know if we need to do that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm impressed by bioportal, and my dream had always been that we could just, import other ontologies into it, and all we'd be talking about in like this would be how to add new functionality and new ideas. And I've just kind of become a little frustrated with these built-in restrictions. It's really unfortunate.
Well, that's what we should. I don't want to diverge from bioportal until there's a real consensus in the community.
Exactly. That's true.
So we'll leave this open to discussion on the OR dev and kind of weigh the advantages and disadvantages of this. Does that sound reasonable?
Yeah.
Peter, are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is an issue I think we should raise and discuss.
Yeah, I think
you want me to post it?
Yes, please post that. One remark that Judge
Eisenberg. Are you going to post it?
No.
Michael. Michael, do you want to post it or should I? Go ahead, Ken. You are articulating it, I think, the best. Okay.
If I may make one comment, Peter here.
Go ahead, Peter.
Yes. One thing, that I keep on trying to draw a distinction, which I guess a few people are still confused between Ontolock and, let's say, an initiative like OOR, is that Ontolock's objective is to create a good conversation. An initiative like OR actually should try to avoid the good conversation, but should focus in getting work done. And in terms of the community-driven initiative, so the only way work gets done is if people step up to the plate and put work on the table. Essentially, bring up the points and do it themselves. So I think I appreciate, all the presentations made today, because they were all sort of grounded from real work that is being done. And also, last Thursday's was, so if we keep doing this, continuing this trend, I think we are heading in the right direction. Back to Todd and Michael.
Yeah, I agree with you there. In raising this issue, I'm not just saying, should we or shouldn't we. I'm saying, I'm asking, okay, who is going to do this? I mean, we need people who are actually going to, produce suggestions for the new interface and suggest possibilities for the architecture and move the development forward. Okay.
It looks like there's a little bit of activity. Oh, here, Emmanuel, you have a point?
Emmanuel, you raised your hand.
Yeah, I want to propose something to get the work done concretely. I think one good step was already this web page with use cases that's set up by Ken. And I think we need more kind of that infrastructure so that this gets open to those people willing to contribute there. I mean, for instance, for my person, I can say, I would put there my own use cases, so this is concrete work that could be done from my side, and so we can collect it on such kind of wiki page dedicated, for instance, for use cases, or other wiki pages could be dedicated for defining web interfaces or kinds like that. That's my proposal.
Yeah, web interfaces would be good too. Get some rest and soap for hits, for example, would be really great. Are you going to be doing that, Emmanuel?
Yeah, actually, I was also talking about.
We lost you, Emmanuel?
We lost you. Can't hear you.
In the meantime, there are people who are typing in comments still in the chat room. Is there anybody else that has a verbal comment?
Yeah, I guess one final try. Is Alex Garcia online? You're definitely not in the chat room, but are you on the call? Guess not. Back to the chair.
Okay, well, we need to wait for Emmanuel to connect again, but we are approaching the hour. I guess we could just wrap it up then and continue some of this. I lost the telephone connection, don't know why. I think if we can continue some of this discussion on the list, I think, like Peter and Ken have said, you know, that I think there's been a lot of good kind of focused talk in today's meeting. So we'll try to keep this momentum up, particularly kind of getting the use cases. I'd hope maybe naively that we would have been able to have a slightly more focused future plan here, but I suppose that could be the point of our next general OR meeting where we would be laying out a game plan. So if no one else has any other comments.
I'm typing a comment on the chat board.
Okay.
For response to Cameron.
And I think he's asking, what is the issue? And
I want to make sure that my understanding of what the issue is in fact what you and Michael were talking about. So, or maybe not the issue, but the proposal. What are we saying in terms of BioPortal?
And basically, the issue I see it is whether the fork should remain, you know, consistent with BioPortal code base, so that we could, in principle, at least make use of the updates that BioPortal is making, or you know, should we, diverge to such an extent that we would actually no longer be able to do that?
Okay.
Yeah, it is really a fork, or is it something different?
Got it. Thanks.
So there, I posted that, what I think is the issue. And I think it's a significant issue. We really have to think about whether this is something we want to do. And I guess, like I said, I already gave my argument, which was that side of industrial strength software in our reference implementation. We just need to have a very well thought out API, you know, reference implementation that gives the basic implementation, and leave it for, you know, other groups to do the actual development of commercial and industrial OOR implementation. So that I think is one of the arguments in favor of having a bigger divergence than just fork.
Yeah. So I guess Peter, you have one more question before we finish?
Emmanuel has posted something. Okay, he's going to be putting his comments in the OOR mailing list because his telephone isn't working.
So, Peter, do you have one last comment before we finish?
Peter, you're still with your hand up?
Okay, well, in the absence of a reply there, I think, Ken's kind of, captured, I think, you know, the nugget here, dealing with, you know, whether or not this is a fork from bipolar or a more substantial, difference. And I think that should be kind of, what we should be thinking of, I guess, until the next, OR telecon, where we can maybe translate some of this, these ideas into some, actual plans. I guess we will conclude then for today, and keep posted for future OOR meetings. Thanks for everyone. Thank you for all the contributors, and thanks for everyone who has been in discussions in the chat room. Bye-bye.
Bye.